The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finn, and we've got a wonderful show for you today. We're going to do a rebroadcast. Claire Feierstein, Children of Holocaust Survivors, is going to be talking with us today, and you're going to love it. I am so totally and completely sure. We've got lots of wonderful music for you. The portion of the week is the portion of Re'eh in the book of Deuteronomy. We have a very interesting story at the end of the show. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Arabs open fire on IDF troops near the Palestinian-controlled city of Jenin. At the same time, other Arab attackers hurled rocks at the soldiers. Soldiers were in the area to arrest a man suspected of terror-related crimes. Soldiers returned fire, wounding one attacker. The troops managed to arrest the suspect they had come to get. Despite the attack, he was taken to security services for question. In a compromise to avoid labeling Hezbollah a terrorist group, look at this one, the European Union voted to place the Hezbollah military wing on a list of terrorist entities. Israel urged the European Union to list the entire group as a terrorist organization. Duh. Two mortar shells struck Israel's southern region, surprising residents who had no warning of the attack. The color red incoming rocket alert siren malfunctioned and did not activate. This is some very disturbing news. Rab Avadya Isakov, a Chabad emissary in Derbent, Dagestan region of Russia, was shot and seriously injured near his home. Police believe the attack was motivated by anti-Semitism. Dagestan has suffered frequent terrorist violence in recent years, much of it due to clashes between Sufi and Salafist Muslim groups. Rabbi Isakov was taken to a hospital in Israel and remains in intensive care. Israeli-Turkish reconciliation talks are stuck over whether Israel's payment to Turkey is a voluntary gift or compensation for a wrongful act. Turkey downgraded diplomatic ties with Israel and expelled Israel's ambassador after the 2010 flotilla incident in which Israeli troops, while stopping a ship in a flotilla trying to break Israel's blockade of Gaza, killed nine Turks on board the ship Mavi Marmara. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu apologized to Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan in March, and representatives of the countries met for reconciliation talks in April and May. Turkey also wants Israel to ease its blockade of Gaza before they can normalize relations, at which case I know what I would tell them to do. Just leave it that way. Israel publicized plans to build a network of high-speed trains that would run between westbound population centers and connect them with Israel, Jordan, and Syria. The network would be up and running by 2035, would carry up to 30 million passengers a year on nearly 300 miles of track between 30 cities and the borders. Because the network would run through the Palestinian area, the Palestinians have to give approval. So far, they have refused. Sarah Ali, age 26, a Canadian woman of Pakistani descent, was deported to Canada from Israel after she attacked a policewoman in Hebron. She actually went up to the woman and bit her. Ali was a volunteer in a group called Youth Against the Settlements, so she can just go back to settling in Toronto. Speaking of Canada, seven Iranians were caught using fake Israeli passports at Vancouver International Airport. The passport contained several Hebrew errors and mismatched translations. And I'm thinking these were not like terrorists or people trying to get into Canada. I think these are people that are basically just trying to get out of Iran. And finally, elections were held for the chief rabbis of Israel. Rabbi Yisroel Yosef, son of former chief rabbi Rabbi Avadya Yosef, is the new chief Sephardi rabbi. Rabbi David Lau, son of former chief rabbi Meir Lau, is the new Ashkenazi rabbi. The position is held for 10 years. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. Or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
We have on live Clara Firestone, who is the director of an organization called Second Generation, dealing with the children, I suppose, of Holocaust survivors. How are you today, Clara?
I'm fine, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on and taking up so much of your time. I know it's the middle of the day.
My pleasure. But we
appreciate it. Tell us about this organization that's been started.
Second Generation Los Angeles is one of a number of organizations for children of survivors in the United States. There are also organizations outside of the United States. And in addition to being the founder and president of Second Generation Los Angeles, which I founded in 1978, I'm also one of the co-founders of an international organization called Generations of the Shoah International. And with that organization, we do cover the entire globe.
Mm-hmm. I was in Australia in the mid-1980s, and the Australian Jewish community is, for the most part, primarily Holocaust survivors, or at this point, the descendants of Holocaust survivors. And I was in Kola, and my job was to learn with people. And one day, this person, he was a young man, he was in his early 20s, came in, and he just said, "You know, I'm really fed up with my parents. I'm going to start a support group and call it Children of Survivors." Okay? And he was like really frustrated. Something with his mother yelled at him for something. I'm not sure what it was. And so he found five other friends whose parents were Holocaust survivors, and they got together on a Thursday night. And for them, it was an excuse to break out a bottle, and they started having what would be called a for bringing a gathering. But then one of them said, "Listen, this is a support group, but I got a problem." And then they realized that there is a need for the children of survivors to get together and to continue on where their parents did or didn't leave off. And that group turned in and very shortly went from five people making a joke to a very major organization in Melbourne, Australia.
Yes, they have a big group there.
Okay, so now, so tell us then, what is the focus of the children of survivor groups then?
Well, each one, because we are all independent, is slightly different. I will say, ours being the first, was founded about the time that Helen Epstein's seminal book, Children of the Holocaust, came out, and near the time that the television series Holocaust came out. So there was this new awakening in the general public of survivors. Up until this time, they'd generally been pretty under the radar, which is where they wanted to be. But we began to realize that there was something very different about us than our peers. And at the time, Rabbi Cooper of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, Museum of Tolerance here in Los Angeles, asked me to come to a meeting because he also had that feeling and was wanting to know if I would be interested in helping to start this group.
Okay, so
our original focus at that time was to have what we then called a wrap group, or now call a support group, was to have these discussions, trying to figure out actually who and what we were, to find out what this animal called a second generation, what it looked like, smelled like, tasted like, felt like, what was it all about. And through those discussion groups, we came to realize what our commonalities were and what our common effects were that we experienced from being raised by Holocaust survivors. The first wave of children of Holocaust survivors, meaning those immediately post-war, have a little bit different experience than the second wave, who came, let's say, maybe after the survivors had already come to the United States or other countries and started to assimilate and started to heal. Their experiences were different. Second generation originally was addressing these kind of psychological issues first, and then would have a monthly panel or educational type of event. Today we're all about Holocaust education and commemoration.
Mm-hmm. So your focus has changed, but let's go back a little bit into what you were saying before.
Okay.
When I was growing up, everybody said, boy, I wish I had parents like yours, Finman. And I just thought, are you absolutely screaming yellow zonkers? I wish I had parents like yours.
Right.
So everybody has problems with their parents.
Sure.
So what was then how did you feel that you were different than your peers?
Well, first of all, when you grow up with an extreme trauma, and that would sort of be an understatement in the case of survivors, when you grow up with extreme trauma and an event as horrific and of the magnitude as the Holocaust as your backdrop and as your filter for the world, that already will set you apart from your peers, because you are really looking at the world through a whole different set of eyes. We grew up with parents who, in many instances, were hypervigilant. So we grew up hypervigilant. We grew up with trust issues, because the survivors tended to insulate themselves as much as they could away from the American population and clung to themselves for support, and so that made for a little more insular upbringing, although we became pretty typical American kids, I would say. But there was also the very ugly side, which nobody really wants to look at, and which in many cases wasn't even recognized for what it was at the time, and that was that there was violence in the home.
Oh, okay.
So if you know anything of what we know today about domestic violence, there was violence, physical violence, emotional, psychological things inflicted upon the children. Inadvertently, to be sure, the parents didn't want to do that. But they had no other outlets for their rage.
That's fascinating. This has never been brought up to me. I'm with an organization here in Detroit called the Jewish Coalition Against Domestic Abuse. And the idea of a subgroup of Holocaust survivors as being someone to address never really came up. And this is actually the first time that I'm hearing about it.
Well, let me tell you, I'm have been running groups for children of survivors for the last 32 years, in addition to which I'm a psychotherapist, and one of my specialties is children of survivors. So I see a lot of them. And this aspect of the violence in the home, physical abuse, emotional abuse, only appeared, dared to appear, I would say, about roughly 7 years ago that it first came up in a group. Up until then, I hadn't heard of it either, and really hadn't seen it, not in my own home, so or among the survivors I knew. So this was very much kept, you know, as a huge secret, which it usually is in families anyway where there's any kind of abuse.
Right.
And also that children of survivors, as with most children, what you see at home is what you come to know as, quote, normal. They didn't always know that other homes weren't like ours. As you get older into your teens, you do. But in the younger years, this is just the way it is at home. This is just who your parents are. And, of course, because we knew that they were so had been so badly brutalized during the war, we excused them everything because we didn't want to cause them any more pain and suffering. So we excused everything away.
Mm-hmm. I remember some of my friends saying, this is when I was in Shilkoop. It was interesting, when growing up in New Jersey, I didn't have any friends whose parents were Holocaust survivors. They were all, the people who spoke with Yiddish accents were all their grandparents, as was mine.
Right.
But in Australia, there was like a generation behind, where everybody was my age but speaking Yiddish, like my mother spoke Yiddish, and their parents were like my grandmother. There were two opinions as to their relationship with their parents and the idea of the Holocaust. One opinion was, I wish my parents would just stop talking about their experience. And the other ones was, I just wish my parents would talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them seem to have an equal trauma and effect on the kids. If you could please comment on that, Clara Finkelstein, Feierstein from second generation.
Well, I would like to also put a caveat to what I was saying before with regards to domestic violence and abuse in the home. And that certainly was not in every family.
Okay.
So let me make that very, very clear. There were certainly families who were well more adjusted to their experience, again, depending on the type of experience they had during the war and depending on their own resiliency and coping mechanisms. But very definitely there was this split between survivors, some who still needed to work through everything that they had experienced and couldn't stop talking about it because they needed this venting mechanism in order to relieve the emotions they were feeling. And then there's the other side who were so traumatized that they couldn't do enough and fast enough to try and forget as much as they could and go numb, and those were the ones who would refuse to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Those that talked probably said more than a, you know, very small child needs to hear at times. And so, again, some of the children were raised with very horrific stories at a very early age. And constantly to have to live with the Holocaust is very, very difficult. And we tried as children to go on, you know, and have normal lives in this country. We hadn't been through the experience, but certainly affected by it more than anybody else after the war.
Mm-hmm.
Those that didn't talk about it, when there are, quote, secrets in the home, in family psychology, family dynamic, the secret starts to loom large. And children have very fertile imaginations. So what they didn't hear, they will fill in the blanks with their imagination. And sometimes the imagination was worse than the reality even. So they would fill in these blanks about what happened to their parents. Or they grew up with a total disconnect of any history whatsoever. And we are the first generation that I know of in history where an entire generation has been cut off from its ancestry. So it's as if we started, you know, life new.
Mm-hmm. Which I suppose for many of them really is actually true. That wasn't a new beginning, and what the parents wanted was
absolutely. We were, I mean, certainly there were those thankfully rare instances where people did have grandparents who survived, et cetera. But for the vast majority, that was not the case, and almost an entire generation is cut off from its total ancestry. That means any extended family, and that was unique in history, and that also played a huge effect on our psyches.
Indeed.
We didn't have what to connect with other than by stories, because even the photographs didn't exist. Even in most cases, there were no photographs, no documents, no nothing tangible that would connect us back to anything in our ancestry.
Right. Understood.
So we were like suspended in space.
Mm-hmm. I understand. We have numbers of how many people were murdered in the camps. Do we have demographics and numbers on how many people actually survived?
You know, there's never been a really accurate demographic. We wish there was. I've heard that it was roughly 600,000 that survived overall, the vast majority going either to Israel or to the United States. At the present time, we can't tell you at all about demographics.
Right, as to...
Or second-generation demographics, mm-hmm. which we
that
wish
was,
there
that was my
too.
Next question, is how many children are there? And at this point, you started your group in 1978. Now we're talking about third generation. Is there...
And fourth.
Is there a third generation, a fourth generation Holocaust survivor? Has it been already, the problem is that far removed already, that it's being forgotten and they're just assimilating into American culture or wherever the culture happens to be?
Not at all. Not at all. Unfortunately, they're studying now what they call transgenerational transmission of trauma, particularly because of the experience of the Holocaust survivors and their children. And the third generation has its own unique experience, because every trauma brings its reaction, and so the way we reacted to our parents' trauma and grew up and had our own shtick, as you will, for lack of a better word, our own idiosyncrasies. Our children developed through those idiosyncrasies.
Okay. So I suppose there will be eventually an organization called Third Generation.
There is now.
There is.
Most of the second generation organizations tried very hard to get their kids involved so that they could take over the work that we were doing. But the third generation really wanted to be independent and had their own ideas, and we think that's wonderful and we support them.
That's normal, yeah. My father wants me to do something, but I'm not going to do that.
It was a little bit of that. there is an organization now, a third-generation organization, started in New York.
It probably has a Facebook. I could probably go online right now and check. Yes. Okay, I'm sorry.
That's okay. There's a third-generation organization that started out of New York. There is a third-generation organization that started on Facebook, which has a huge presence, I understand. And I just recently heard that another organization is being started out of San Francisco.
Okay. Good. Now, okay. You mentioned before in the onset that the focus of the organizations is changing more now to be education and awareness, rather than just being serving as a self-help groups?
I'm sorry, you cut out on me a little bit.
Okay.
Can we do that again?
Yeah, you mentioned before that your focus is now changing towards education and awareness.
And education and commemoration, yes.
Yes, okay. Could you explain it a little bit more? Go into a little bit more. What is that? What's entailed with that?
Well, what we do primarily, what our focus is, and again, we still have the social and networking aspect of the organization, because children of survivors feel more comfortable around their own. And so we definitely provide social activities that allow them to network and socialize with each other. But what we also do, as we did just last week, we have educational events that can consist of a speaker, a panel discussion, a film, anything that relates to the Holocaust, some aspect of the Holocaust. We ran a four-part series, which we called our Shoah Enlightenment series last year, where we had two speakers, one of whom was Dr. Michael Birnbaum, who is a very famous Holocaust historian in the country, mm-hmm. who was responsible for the content of the U.S. Holocaust Museum. Yes. He spoke to us twice, as did the archivist and historian for our local museum, the L.A. Museum of the Holocaust, which is the oldest Holocaust museum in the country. And we took different aspects, lesser-known aspects of the Holocaust, and went a little more in-depth, including our museum has a collection of a particular artist, Eli Leskley, that is done in all in caricature, where he basically documented ghetto and camp life after the war in this unique caricature style, and we housed the entire collection, so we had an art showing and a little history lesson about that collection. Last week, we did a panel. I assembled five consuls general from the Czech Republic, France, Germany, Hungary, and Poland to discuss anti-Semitism in Europe today.
Okay, tell us about that, please.
Well, that was sort of an interesting experience. I had the idea that I wanted us to try and find out if we could, from the inside out, in other words, from the people on the ground, what were the causes of anti-Semitism currently today, and what was each country doing to address it?
Mm-hmm. Did you get a lot of denial of anti-Semitism from these consul generals?
Not outright denial, let me put it that way. And for the most part, the consuls were very forthcoming and very willing to look at the topic and not shy away from the difficult questions. The only person that I sort of thought was not really, either was looking at it through rose-colored glasses, maybe, or just not aware as much because he was here, and that was the Hungarian consul.
Mm-hmm.
While he did speak to all the different laws that were in place, and he urged what he wanted was global cooperation. He thought that global cooperation and education was the way to eliminate the current anti-Semitism. Hungary, unlike the other countries, does not have a particularly large Muslim influx. So the anti-Semitism that's being fomented, let's say, in France or in Britain and to maybe a lesser degree in Germany, that is anti-Israel and anti-Jewish, does not exist in Hungary. In Hungary, it's more systemic in the society and has gone back for many, many years. And I think that I think that what he was saying, he believed. And he talked about all the laws that they have where neo-Nazi demonstrations were banned back in 1994. There's mandatory Holocaust education. There are laws even against denial of the Holocaust. If you deny the Holocaust in Hungary, you can have a sentence up to 3 years. And he talked about there being possibly a religious basis when we talk about, you know, the blood libel of the Jews that's been perpetrated for years, and they're a very Catholic country. But it seems from the reports that I got from people, especially who were there recently, the Jewish community is afraid there, and a lot of them would like to leave and go to Israel.
Okay. So I've often maintained that no Jew should be living anywhere between London and Vladivostok, actually, but...
I'm sorry, you cut out on me again?
I said, I've often maintained that no Jew should be living anywhere between London and Vladivostok.
Well, that's probably the case, but then again, you know, do we really want to make Europe Judenfrei? Then we would have completed Hitler's desires. And do we want to do his work?
If you're asking me, I'm not so sure it's not such a bad idea if all the Jews pick themselves up and move to Israel and then strengthen what was going on over there and making it a multicultural, indeed Jewish state. But that's for a point of debate, I gather. And indeed, would the rest of Europe suffer? Yes, Europe would suffer if there were no Jews living there. We saw what has happened with, for example, like Poland and the countries like Lithuania, Estonia, Serbia, those countries, when the Jews are no longer there, that their countries don't function as well. So it doesn't really bother me if Europe wouldn't be functioning so well. But like I said, that's for a point of a different debate.
Yeah.
Were there any conclusions made of this panel discussion? It sounds actually very fascinating. Is it available online, for chance, the proceedings?
Not yet. We're editing it down. Jewish Life Television was there. And they are wanting to put it on broadcast there, but the tapes are not available yet. They're being digitized and edited, so it may be a while, but it should be up. And we're going to try and put at least a clip up, posted on YouTube, and then it will tell you how to get to the full
mm-hmm.
The full one may take a while yet.
Okay, that's true.
I can tell you that what came out of it, and certainly at the outset I made it very clear that we were going to get no solutions going, where the title included solutions, that was a very hopeful, at least that we could get to a beginning point for looking at solutions. Education seemed to be the fundamental consensus. That without education on both Jewish history, the Holocaust particularly, we're never going to rid the world of anti-Semitism. The Czech consul was a little more realistic and goes more along my particular personal lines, and that is, I don't think we'll ever totally eliminate anti-Semitism from the world, because you can't eliminate hatred from the world. It's just a fact of life, but you can certainly reduce it a lot. You can make sure that it's not state-sanctioned, and try to educate it out of society, anti-Semitism out of society, as best you can, and constantly be working towards it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to have to wrap it up first. We're running out of time with this segment. Our guest has been Clara Firestone, who is the director of Second Generation Group for supporting and helping to educate the world around us of Holocaust and the Holocaust survivors. And thank you so much, and I'm really appreciated that you were able to take out time for your day.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Chiropractic healthcare offers patients the advantage of a safe and natural method of healing without the use of drugs or surgery. People of all ages, including children, benefit from chiropractic's unique approach to health. Call area code 248-557-1818 today to find out how chiropractic can benefit your family. At the Solomon Chiropractic Center, we especially love children. All kids should have their spines checked periodically throughout their crucial growing years. Growth on a crooked foundation will create a crooked spine and become harder to correct later in life. Kids love to get adjusted at the Solomon Chiropractic Center. And hey, moms, did you know that chiropractic offers a safe, drug-free approach to helping with the many pains women often get during and after pregnancy? We even have special tables which open up so pregnant women can lay on their stomachs. We treat moms, dads, children, and grandparents with arthritic pains, neck pains, back pain, and headaches. People of all ages, including kids, benefit from chiropractic. Come experience the natural method of healing without the use of drugs or surgery. Stop living in pain. Call area code 248-557-1818 today for a free consultation at the Solomon Chiropractic Center to discuss you and your family's health needs. Remember, 557-1818. That's 557-HI-HI.
Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. I hope you really liked that interview. That was really pretty amazing. Anyway, some PSAs going on over here. New exhibit at the Holocaust Memorial, Beyond Swastikas and Jim Crow, tells the story of Jewish professors who fled Nazism and came to America in the 30s and 40s, finding teaching positions in historically black colleges and universities. This is an exhibit that's going to be on display until the middle of December. But on August 4th, they're going to have a special presentation. It's at 2:30 is exclusive membership only. 4 p.m. is keynote speaker Reverend Kenneth J. Flowers. And you'll want to get, for more information, go to holocaustcenter.org. That's number one. Number two. Join the Federation as they spread cheer to community seniors by creating and delivering beautiful gift packages. Thursday, August the 22nd, Congregation Shari Tzedek. Children and teens are encouraged to attend 9:30 in the morning, and a $5 donation to cover the packages for the seniors is requested. Contact Megan Topper at 248-203-1460, or Topper, T-O-P-P-E-R, at jfmd.org. That's Jewish Federation Metropolitan Detroit.org. And finally, this one's a keeper. I'm going to have to try to get this guy on my show. As part of the upcoming art media fair type thing that they're having at the JCC, Rabbi Benjamin Blech will be speaking on the Jewish Sistine Chapel. That's Wednesday, August the 28th at 7:30. And there's a lunch and learn, The Holy Jewish Treasures of the Vatican, A Miracle on a Mission to Rome. He found over 80 ancient and valuable Jewish manuscripts, 800. And that's Thursday, August the 29th at noon, a kosher buffet lunch. And we will try to get this person on the air. For purchase tickets, to go call 248-661-1900 or go to theberman.org. Your organization having a something? Well, contact me at www.rabbifinman.com and we will let people know about it. Of course, it's free of charge. That's the nature of a public service announcement. Time for a little bit of music. This is Shlomi Docs. This is a request. Came over. If you want to request any type of music you'd like to hear, send that to me to rabbifinman.com. This is Shlomi Docs singing Some Aloha Nafshi. My thirst longs for you, God. Let's listen in.
Tama lecha, tama lecha nafshi. Koma, koma lecha, koma lecha besori. Tama, tama lecha. Come on, come on.
Of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale. Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We got his two requests. The other one didn't want his name mentioned, but there's a young person who actually wrote that they're 14 years old. They live in West Bloomfield. They go to public school there. Listen to the Jewish Hour on 1500 a.m. over here every Sunday. And has having problems finding Theodore Bekel music and wanted to know if I could play something very typical Theodore Bekel. So, Theodore Bekel cut, probably 8 zillion records. Four of them in Yiddish, two of them in Hebrew that I know about. So, going to the archives of the Jewish Hour disc library, pulled out Ich bin a Mädel auf der Joren, which really translates is I'm a girl old enough to get married. So, and which means, and the punchline is I really should be married by now. So let's listen to Theodore Bekel.
Ich bin mir a Mädel in die Joren. Was hast du mir den Kopf verdreht? Was hast du mir den Kopf verdreht? Ich wollte schon lange Kalle geworden und öfter Tage Hassene gehabt. Ich wollte schon lange Kalle geworden und öfter Tage Hassene gehabt. Und Tomer geht es dir in Naden, die Mame wird verkäufen, die Stieb, die Mame wird verkäufen, die Stieb. Hallo, mir beide Hassene hoffen, weil ich hab dich so lieb. Hallo, mir beide Hassene hoffen, weil ich hab dich so lieb. Und nefscher geht dir Ketz allein jiches, mein Seite ist gewesen narof, mein Seite ist gewesen narof, mein Tate ist gewender, schönster geht in Städtel und soll schon nehmen as auf. Mein Tate ist gewender, schönster geht in Städtel und soll schon nehmen as auf.
Musik.
Ich bin mir am Mädel in die Jorn. Was hast du mir den Kopf verdreht? Was hast du mir den Kopf verdreht? Ich wollte schon lange Kalle geworden und öfter Tage Hassene gehabt. Ich wollte schon lange Kalle geworden und öfter Tage Hassene gehabt. Und Tomer geht es dir in Nacken, die Mame wird verkäufen, die Stieb, die Mame wird verkäufen, die Stieb. Tolo mir beide Hassen erhoben, weil ich hod dich also lieb. Tolo mir beide Hassen erhoben, weil ich hod dich also lieb. Und efter geht dir Ketz allein jiches, mein Seide ist gewesen narauf, mein Seide ist gewesen narauf, mein Tate ist gewender, schönster geht in Städtel und soll schon nehmen als auf. Mein Tate ist gewender, schönster geht in Städtel und soll schon nehmen als auf.
Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. This week is the portion of Re'eh. It can be found in the book of Exodus chapter 12 and, excuse me, the book of Deuteronomy chapter 12 and following. There are 52 commandments mentioned in the portion. That's basically what the portion is comprised of. We don't have a whole lot of time, so just, I'm not going to discuss the 52 mitzvahs. I'm going to discuss the word Re'eh, which is the name of the portion, which is, means look here. The portion starts out, Moses says, look, I'm giving you a choice, and I want to make the choice really simple and easy for you. You have a choice of life and blessing and death and curse. Okay? It's like no-brainer. Hello? There's nothing obvious in the Bible. Moses isn't saying something that, well, of course I'm going to choose life over death, you know. The Alter Rebbe, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, explains that there's either holiness or not. He doesn't pull any punches. There's no like gray matter. But when we look around, there's a lot of space in between holy and unholy. It's our choice to take to make that stuff. There's a lot of stuff in the world which could go either way. Like for example, brunch this morning. We have an opportunity. You can make it holy, or you can make it unholy. It totally depends on you. Eat it like a glutton, it's unholy. Eat it to serve God, figure a way out how to do it. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but that's the idea. Choose life. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for the Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? RabbiFinman.com, www.RabbiFinman.com. Right on the home page over there, you hit the contact link. You contact me, I contact you, and everybody lives happily ever after. What else will you find on RabbiFinman.com? We got archived editions of the show for about going back about the last month. We've got classes that we teach, in-depth analysis, good stuff posted right on there. You can listen to it right in the convenience of your own home. Editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U story, which are insights into the Torah portion of the week, Hasidic stories, etc., given over by yours truly in different formats. And, of course, the very important donations page. We're coming to the end of July. We need your help, folks. Do it today. Go to RabbiFinman.com. Donate. Don't like using internet for donations? That's fine. Send your donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. I want to thank those who have done so now, and hopefully things are really doing very well for you, and encourage those people who have been somewhat recalcitrant from giving because you're listening, and this is listener-supported radio. We need your support to keep it on air. Now, 17 years we've been doing this, 17 and a half years we're doing this already. We're in our 18th year. Give to the Jewish Hour, please. Okay, about 1985, 86, I'm not sure exactly when this story happened, somewhere in the mid-80s. There was a disabled veteran from Israel came to America with the idea that the streets of America were paved with gold. And he got here and found out that that wasn't the case. And decided he's going to go to different places when he wants to get work. So people, he knocks on doors, and the first thing they say, you know, is like, do you have a green card? I said, no, I'm not. He evidently was an illegal alien, which is something that you're talking about now. The immigration bill has been so hot these days. And he wandered around the streets, and finally the money that he brought was all used up with him that he had. And he wound up on a park bench in Central Park. A priest came up to him in the middle of the night and said, hey, do you do drugs? I said, no. So you got a criminal record? I said, no. I said, you'll come sleep in my church. We have a homeless shelter. Gave him a hot meal, got him a shower, gave him a blanket and a pillow. And the next morning he said, so what do you need? He said, I need a job. So the priest gave him $20 and said, go see what you can find. In the meantime, you're Jewish. I'm going to call the Jewish organization to see what's going to happen with you. The next, he comes by that night, and he said, I called a bunch of organizations, and the only advice they gave him was to put you back on a plane and send you back to Israel, which, thinking about it, probably would not have been such a bad idea. But that's not what the guy wanted to do. Finally, after about 2 weeks of this, he said, I got one organization left. It's called the Jewish Agency for the Furtherance of Jewish, the Agency for Jewish, the, yeah, I can't even say it anymore. J.J. Hecht's office, the Agency for the Furtherance of Jewish Education. Called up J.J. Hecht. He said, I'm a priest. I got a guy here. And I made him a deal that if he wants to convert to Judaism, I'll get him a green card. So J.J. Hecht said, told the secretary, drop all of my appointments, ran out of his office in Brooklyn, drove his car like a New Yorker would be proud of, and wound up in front of on the sidewalk, because there's no place to park in Manhattan, in front of the church of this guy, grabbed the protagonist of our story, Uri, and said, thank you, Father, for all that you've done. I'll take over from here. And he said to him, listen, from now on, you can be considered like one of my 12 children. I will take care of you. Indeed, Rabbi Heck took care of him and set him up, got him some work on the sly, some cash stuff. And a couple of months went by, and he's still working with the guy. And one day the guy, Uri, comes to the office and says, where's Rabbi Hecht? And he said, Rabbi Hecht passed away. Now, that would be an end of another story of itself. But shortly thereafter, this Uri got engaged. And this woman who lived in Brooklyn Heights said, you have to meet my rabbi, whose name is Rabbi Label Raskin. And he told him the whole story about Rabbi Hecht. And Rabbi Label Raskin said to him, J.J. Hecht was my grandfather. I'm going to take over where he left off. And indeed, they got married, they got a green card, they live in Brooklyn Heights, they are productive members of society, and religious on the food. That's the story. I want to thank you so much. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you again, back again next week. Thanks.